Fab Sesmatch Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
It's Thursday on AZ Central Sports and Sports 360 AZ. My name is Jared Cohen. That's Paula Boven. We're filling in for Brad Sesmat today on the show. It's going to be a great one. We've got a great list of guests and all sorts of topics to go over, both locally and nationally. We'll be joined by the head coach of the St. Mary's College Gaels, Randy Bennett. Has some ties to Arizona. He also happens to be a former head coach of the man of the hour, Matthew Dellavedova, who is going to be getting ready to play game four tonight against the Golden State Warriors. And then we'll be joined by Rich Rodriguez, the head coach of the Arizona Wildcats. That'll be coming up as well. My name is Jared Cohen. That's Paula Boven. Paula, thank you so much again for doing this. Second time this week. That's pretty awesome.
It's very awesome. And it's a great week to do it. There's not any shortage of sports and news this week.
Not at all. Not any shortage. So let's jump right into all this stuff, all this good stuff. And what's going on in the world of sports is brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Stop into Santan Ford for their great variety and selection on new or certified pre-owned vehicles just off the 202 in Val Vista. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. The story of the day is, of course, the Arizona Coyotes. And last night, it was approved, or I guess you could say, I'm going to really struggle with some of the terminology here because I am not an expert in this field. I'll do my best to relay everything that's going on. You'll help me carry through this.
Of course.
But the city of Glendale has basically approved their attempt to get rid of this 15-year contract that they're trying to get out of after just 2 years with the Coyotes.
You know, this one feels different to me. And how many, so many storylines with the Coyotes over the years, maybe they're going to move, you know, new ownership. Everyone, I always kind of felt like the Coyotes were going to bounce back this one fine. This one troubles me a little bit because, I mean, there is language in this contract, Jared, that, I mean, the reason they voted to void this agreement was because they found language that basically said they could do it because of this, and we'll get into this a little bit more, but because of this attorney who went from basically one side to the other. And I know you talked to your dad, who is a judge, and kind of clarified it a little bit. I think Coyote fans have to be a little bit nervous about this one.
Yeah, and what I'll relay, because we talked about this before the show, my father is a judge here in Maricopa County, and I go to him this morning when dropping my three-year-old off, and I say, basically, what's the deal here? Who, without any biases, because, you know, he's a Coyotes fan, he doesn't want to see them go anywhere, but without any biases, which he does on a daily basis, being a judge, does the city of Glendale have a point here? And he said, the best way I could describe it is, Paula, say you and I are going through a divorce, God forbid, and your representation, and I have my representation, and someone from the law firm, an attorney from the law firm that you're working with leaves that law firm and comes to work for the law firm that's representing me and now is involved with the case. Whether or not that person was involved for you during this case, it doesn't matter. It's still somewhat of a conflict of interest because that person is privy to strategy or things or a mentality or different things that could really get in the way of your representation, doing the best to represent you. That, on a much lower degree, is kind of what's going on here, except when it comes to huge institutions like the city of Glendale and the Arizona Coyotes, there are laws that prevent this. And there is, in fact, the case where there is a law, whether it was dug up and dusted off or whatever it is, there is a law that states that if someone basically, for lack of a better term, switches sides, there is a law that prohibits that, and there is an out for the city of Glendale in this situation. They have something here, and whether it's nitpicking or them just trying to pull political moves to get out of this contract, it is still a law at the end of the day.
And it is, you know, conflict of interest is a huge thing in the business community and the legal community. It finds itself in court all the time. And specifically, it was involving this former city attorney, I think it's pronounced Craig Tindall. In 2013, they had a separation agreement. The Glendale continued to pay him a salary for 6 months as a consultant. But then the Coyotes hired him about 7 weeks after Glendale approved that Coyotes deal. And at the time, it seemed fine for both sides. And the Coyotes have said, well, that wasn't a problem initially. Why are you bringing it out now? It's clear the only reason that Glendale is bringing this out is because they are losing a ton of money and they want to get out of this contract. I mean, we're hearing figures like, $8 million, $8.5 million a year. There's a ton of money involved in this, and so they're upset. So,
that's Paula Boven of AZ Central Sports. I'm Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad Sesmat today. Let's get into some of the quotes from last night, starting with Anthony LeBlanc, the minority owner, CEO, does a little bit of everything. He's kind of the face for the Coyotes during all of this mess. He talked about last night how the city of Glendale is way out of line.
Why would we even negotiate a deal that is less than 2 years old that has 13 years remaining? Folks, what we have witnessed here tonight is possibly the most shameful exhibition of government I have ever witnessed. The citizens of Glendale should be very concerned about the government that they have that are leading them right now, because this was not appropriate. And we're, as Nick indicated, we are going to take every legal action at us. And I don't want to be viewed as this, as a bunch of people that are looking, you know, just to take legal action. It is our right. It is a necessity. We have been absolutely wrong this evening by a group that is acting in incredibly bad faith.
And that's from Anthony LeBlanc. Also, last night, fans, members of the community were able to get up, get involved, speak their mind. Got to throw a shout-out to Rhonda Pearson, who had this to say, a season ticket holder at the council meeting last night.
I reside in North Phoenix, and mainly this is directed at you, Mayor Wires. I'm curious because I go to all Coyotes games because I've been a season ticket holder for several years now. Full season, not a half season, not a partial season, full season. I've seen you at game, so many games, a number of times, sporting a jersey that looks just like this one with Mayor on the back and the number one on the back. How much did you pay for your jersey? How much did you pay for your tickets for those games? Because I know I paid a hell of a lot more than you did. I support this team. You don't. You don't show up to games and pay for your tickets. None of you do. Why were you at the Super Bowl? Because you didn't buy a ticket. Someone gave you tickets. What happened to all the events that comes with the Super Bowl? The NFL moved them to Scottsdale because of you. Look at all these people who showed up supporting this team last minute. I haul butt down the road. Please don't give me a speeding ticket, officer. I haul butt to get here so I can speak my mind. Because I support this team. It's you that doesn't support any sport in this city. Not football and certainly not hockey. What you're doing is childish, it's pathetic, and it's just disrespectful to the citizens who voted you in office and for all of us that spent so much time and energy supporting this team when you never did.
And boom goes the dynamite. All I know is I wouldn't want to be her kid and doing something wrong, because that would scare me.
God, that just fires me up. I mean, you know, the key to this whole thing, what she's saying is, bottom line, there was a contract negotiated in good faith. Those are the two key words, good faith. And they are not doing this because they suddenly discovered this loophole. And my God, they wouldn't have signed that contract had they known that. They're doing it to weasel out of a contract. And maybe it was a bad contract they decided on, but that's what contracts are about. They are about signing them in good faith.
Here's the big thing that's the biggest issue around this that everyone knows. And I don't know if they know it. The city of Glendale, it seems to be not an issue for them. When you lose the Coyotes out of Westgate, you are almost losing Westgate, because the Cardinals play one day a week, a little bit during fall camp, but one day a week for, what, 4 or 5 months. When all the other days of the week, there is nothing going on there. When you lose the Coyotes, you lose a ton of jobs. You lose any sort of income, any sort of money coming in and out of that shopping center, everything that goes along. When you lose the Coyotes, you're going to lose business, and the businesses that are around the Coyotes, the restaurants and the stores, those are going to start to fall off. That's even more jobs you lose. You're going to be the Coyotes. Yes, you're losing money on it, but at least you're creating jobs and you're creating some sort of an economic surplus or plus. I don't want to say surplus, a plus, if you will. You really put yourself in a tough spot if the Coyotes are gone. So I don't understand why the move to get them out and get out of this contract and burn this bridge is so important, because the ramifications of it could be a lot worse.
Well, and I think they want to renegotiate the contract to something more palpable for them.
But I don't know how they expect to do that, because they're completely burning a bridge with this team in the NHL.
That's the thing. They're disillusioned if they think that can happen, because the Coyotes aren't going to do that, because the Coyotes, they can't afford to make a different contract. The reason they agreed to this one is the only one that on their side they found palpable. I'm curious, as an arena, how much can arenas sustain themselves without a sports team? How much can they book without a sports team locked in. Their concerts or monster truck shows, all those things. Could an arena like that survive with just those kinds? I know that it's a popular arena.
How's the Coliseum done since the Suns moved out?
Yeah, I mean, but it's a lot older facility, know how willing place, you know, concerts are to have their people go there and things like that. But it's a fair question. I don't know.
It's true. I did see the Foo Fighters there once. That was a great concert. It was great. That's Paula Bovin. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad Sesmat today. We'll switch gears. Coming up next, Randy Bennett, the head coach of the St. Mary's College Gaels. He's got a connection with one of the superstars of the NBA Finals. We'll get to the bottom of that. Coming up on AZ Central Sports and Sports 360 AZ on a busy Thursday.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
Jared Cohen and Paula Bovin filling in for Brad Sesmat here today on the show. Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. Get away from the mess surrounding the Coyotes to talk about one of the best stories in the country right now, maybe even the world, because when it comes to LeBron James, everyone in the world is watching. He's world famous. The NBA Finals going on. The Cavs have a 2-1 series lead over the Golden State Warriors. Game 4 is tonight from Cleveland, and we are very happy to be joined this segment by the St. Mary's College Gaels head basketball coach, Randy Bennett, who just so happens to be also known as Matthew Dellavedova's former coach. And that's quite the title to have these days, isn't it, Coach?
It is. Pretty proud to have that title right now.
No question. So this is probably something that's nothing new to you, as Delly has become one of the sweethearts of the NBA playoffs with what he did first against Atlanta and now what he's doing in the finals. But this is a side of him that you've seen for a long time, isn't it?
You know, it is, and it's kind of fun to see everybody in the country get to see what this, you know, how special this guy is. Not just the fact he scored baskets, but just he's a special competitor. I mean, there's not many guys who play as hard as he does, and that's his piece he brings to the game, is he just competes and plays so hard. So I think it's been interesting to watch it all unfold in the last month, and he was in the little controversy whether he was dirty in the Atlanta series and all that. But just now I think it's kind of been revealed that, hey, this guy really plays hard. And he's a player. He's not just a guy out there hustling. He's getting some things done, helped that team win.
I've watched your program from afar for a long time because you've had this great run of athletes come out of there in this Australian pipeline that must be like, 10, 15 years old now. I wondered when you got him there as a freshman, because there's been even an amazing transformation in his years at St. Mary's. Who was he when you first got him as a freshman there?
You know what? In probably 90% of the ways, he's the same guy he is now. We just shook our head you don't really know what Matt brings until you have him in your program and you're coaching him. And it was, I don't know, a week or two in, we were like, whoa, this guy's a different breed here. Just because he worked so hard, he played so hard, and he's no nonsense. I mean, it was all about what he had to do to help his team win and to improve as a player. So he was what he is now, and I can't tell you how many moments our coaching staff would just shake our heads. God, this guy's unbelievable. And we knew it as a staff. We were like, enjoy these 4 years because you may never coach one like this again.
And now seeing the success that he's having in this type of spotlight, and how the city of Cleveland is almost adopting him as almost kind of like a direct reflection of people in their city, you know, kind of hard-nosed, works really hard, blue-collar. They've kind of adopted him like that. So from your perspective, how cool is this to see this all unfold?
You know, it's unbelievable. I think everybody out here and from our college, our program, this community, he was a legend here. People would come to see him play we went Sweet 16 when he was a freshman. From then on, people recognized what he brought as far as the energy and passion, and they just enjoyed Matt watching him. And so for that to unfold on the biggest stage in basketball, it's one, unbelievable, and two, you're just happy for him, and it couldn't happen to better guys. So that's where we're at.
I mentioned this sort of Australian pipeline, and I wondered, are you getting certain type of player or people from Australia? I mean, is there something different that's hanging on, that's happening over there as far as maybe whether it's fundamentals or grit or effort, or are they players in Australia just like here? I'm just curious why you've had so much success.
There's one common denominator. We've had 15 of them thus far, and one common denominator is that they're such team guys. They're not into the self-promotion, and they're actually uncomfortable with it. And it's part of their culture that team first and about the team and a team spirit. And I think through the rugby and Aussie rules football and just how they're kind of raised. But that's and it's a little different than what we're used to over here. There's so much given to the individual here, but the one thing that they do a great job is they help your team, and they're about making your team better. So they've been great that way. I think the guys that we had through Matt's little era there, those guys came over pretty well prepared. They'd been at Australian Institute of Sport, which is where they send their best 17, 18-year-olds, and then those guys compete in the 19-under World Championship. So that's like a 2-year process, and they were really far along, way more so than a regular high school guy from the United States, as far as they'd been away from home, they knew how to take care of themselves, they were coming over here for a purpose, and they're very appreciative, and they were going to make it work, because they had invested a lot of time and hours, and their families had invested time, hours, and money to get them in this situation. So they were pretty focused on doing whatever they had to do to help the team and do a good job academically too.
St. Mary's basketball coach Randy Bennett joining myself, Jared Cohen, and Paula Boven here on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. I got to ask you, Coach, when you first took this job at St. Mary's, could you ever have envisioned, I mean, you were envisioning success, and you've had some great success while you've been there, but had ever envisioned recruiting and going into families' homes and saying, two of my last point guards and two of the best players to come out of my program have played in consecutive NBA finals?
Probably not. I mean, it's so hard to get a guy in the NBA. I mean, it's hard to get a guy in, and it's hard to get a guy that sticks, and much less be a real player. And then to get on a championship team is so hard, and just in any role, 1 through 15. But these guys are playing on championship teams, or playing in the NBA championship, and playing a legit role. So. Yeah, no, probably not. That's why I say it's kind of surreal a little bit that it's happened with Matt, but it happened last year with Patty too. Mm-hmm. And so we're just fortunate. I'm really happy for these two guys and what they've done, and so it's just exciting.
Randy, there's a lot of familiarity with your family here in the Valley. Your dad, Tom Bennett, legend, Mesa Community College. You played there, if I remember correctly. What are your memories of being there? And also, what do you think of the area right now as far as recruiting? I know you can't get into names and stuff, but it seems like there's a good talent base here in the Phoenix area right now.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. First of all, I love Arizona. I grew up there, born there. That's where I consider home. And I would have never thought that I'd, wouldn't have come back. I always thought I was going to come back there. I probably will when I retire, but anyhow, it's home. I love that place. So I stay in touch with all my friends there and get over there a couple times a year. But the Phoenix area has really grown. The players, there's a great talent base there right now. And I think it's a place that sometimes gets overlooked. So it's a place that we try and recruit. I think it's a good place. Our league's a really good level for a lot of those kids. There's a lot of good programs, a lot of good teams, and they're not, I think they're, I don't know if the word's protected, but they're isolated a little bit more over there than they would be in Southern California or some of the areas that the and recruiting services and AAU programs are really heavy. So I think you can get a good bargain as far as a player. You can get one that's a little under the radar. One of the last ones we had was Mickey McConnell. He ended up being player of the year in our league. And it's funny, he played with Matt. Mickey did. When Mickey was a senior, Matt was a sophomore. And when we lost Mickey, he was player of the year. We won the league. But when we lost Mickey, everybody was like, who's going to be your point guard? It's like, don't you see that other guy playing at the two-guard spot? I guess pretty good, too. That was obviously Matt. And so, anyhow, yeah, we will always recruit there. And I think that area's just improved as far as the number of players. There's always been good players, but I think there's just more and more of them now.
Coach, one thing I wanted to make sure to ask you about, Grand Canyon University out here has multiple times on record saying that they want to build something similar to what St. Mary's and the Gonzagas have done, being a Division I program for basketball, not having a football program attached to it. They're in the process of the trying to get to the success and the accolades that you guys have been able to achieve. You mentioned with Dellavedova going to the Sweet 16, that's something they aspire to make as postseason play. Looking from afar, is GCU on the right track with what they're putting together? And from your perspective, growing a program that's just strictly basketball in the athletic department as one of the main sports and not having football attached to it, what are some of the big things that need to go on to have and maintain the success like you guys have had?
Yeah, you know what? I'm familiar with those guys over there. I know Dan, one of my close friends and former assistants that I worked with is Todd Lee. So I know pretty in tune with their program. They're right on pace. I think these are these first years when they're not eligible for the NCAA tournament. Those are little tricky ones to get through, but they're doing everything they need to be doing to get headed in the right direction. And Grand Canyon has great tradition in basketball. They used to win the NAIA National Championship. I know when they had Baird Forrest, they did. And Wes Ball coached there and won, I think, Division II National Championship. So I think they're sitting on a gem right there. And I think they're putting the resources into it. They've done a tremendous job to build the arena they have, to sell out crowds. And I think Phoenix kids the guys who want to stay home, I think a lot of them do, will end up going there. So I think, I think they could maybe someday end up being in this league. And I think it'd be a good fit for our league. And I think it'd be a good media market for our league to be in. So I think it's only a matter of time. First 4 years, I think they're in year three now. They have to fight through those years, and then when they're eligible for postseason, as far as NIT and NCAA, then I think it's going to happen. It's just a process. It took us a while to build ours up, and then we had to get our resources and commitment to the level that our basketball program was. And I think Grand Canyon's already got that. I think they have the resources and commitment where they need them, and the basketball program just has to follow. So, yeah, I think that one's going to be a really good program, and it'll be fun to watch.
Coach, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it, and hopefully we'll talk again soon.
You got it. Thank you for having me on.
Of course. Thank you. Randy Bennett, St. Mary's College Gaels head basketball coach, former head coach of Matthew Dellavedova, who's become one of the stars, the biggest storylines of the NBA Finals. It's very interesting stuff. Good perspective from him.
Great stuff. I always thought he was going to end up out in the States sometime, maybe ASU job opening up or something like that. For different reasons, I guess it hasn't happened, but with his connections and Every time a job opens up, I hear his name connected. He's done an amazing job at St. Mary's.
He has. That's Paula Bovin. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad Sesmat today on the show. Coming up next, the Diamondbacks just can't figure it out over at Chavez Ravine. They fall again last night. We'll dive into the game and what seems to be in the water over there in L.A. that just kind of screws with the Diamondbacks. We can't seem to figure that out. We'll dive into that next. Again, that's Paula. I'm Jared filling in for Brad on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports.
On one. And he goes to right field. It's a base hit. Here comes Puig. And the Dodgers win it 7-6.
Vin Scully, the legendary Vin Scully, on the call last night from Chavez Ravine as the Diamondbacks fell to the Los Angeles Dodgers for the third straight time, 7-6 in a walk-off. Game-winning single off the bat of Howie Kendrick. That's Paula Bovin. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad Sesmat today. And Paula, the Dodgers have now beaten the Diamondbacks 9 consecutive times in L.A. Yeah. Something's got to be screwy in that visiting team locker room because the Diamondbacks just can't shake it.
I'll tell you what's screwy. It's that the Dodgers have a payroll of, what, $272 million, and the Diamondbacks are like 92. It's like one... The Dodgers are ranked one. Diamondbacks are like 23rd or something. That's what's screwy. I mean, at some point, I know you have to work around those things, but that's certainly contributing.
Believe it or not, though, the guys on the Dodgers this season that have really been the anchors of this team aren't some of the most expensive guys. Jock Peterson, their top prospect, is his average is almost, it was at 220 like a month ago. Now it's pushing 250. He leads the team in home runs. You look at Yasmani Grandal, their catcher. He got hurt a few weeks ago, but he had been having a monster season. And we talked about it very briefly on Monday. Bolsinger, the former Diamondbacks pitcher who's pitching with the Dodgers now, has been better, technically, stats-wise, than both Kershaw and Greinke. And those aren't those three aren't exactly the highest guys on the payroll.
No, so. And I can ruin my own argument. I think the Astros are, like, next to last in payroll in Major League Baseball, and they've been, what, one of the surprises of the season. So, all right, I'll remove that comment.
It's no, there's something to that.
In the pitching. But, you know, part of the problem, I think the Diamondbacks, and I think Nick Pecoro from AZ Central wrote about this today, their number four hitter has not been delivering. And I know that Chip Hale has been disappointed that, you know, there haven't been guys doing enough after Goldie steps up. And Tomas, I think, has done a decent job, but I think through the last – whatever games, four or five games, they're batting like .233. So I think they need a little more production from that spot,
They finally got a little bit from Tomas last night.
Right.
Tomas, he hit one home run.
Right.
And it was just, what is his, just second of the season? He also had another one that was robbed, speaking of Jock Peterson.
Sure.
But Tomas, you're right. And if they could groom him into being that guy that can hit in the four spot, that's exactly what they need. Because it seems like, you know, runners with scoring position, the batting averages and the RBIs last year was horrendous.
Right.
This year's been a little bit better, but still a big problem. And when you look at Paul Goldschmidt, who hit another home run last night, it's just you need to have that protection to let that guy hit and to be able to drive in runs. And they haven't had that. And that's been a huge problem.
It would be. I mean, it's just such an intimidating presence if you could kind of lock it down with that four guy. I know they've tried, Peralta, I think, Pollock, Trumbo. So they're trying, and Tomas, you know, again, young, and maybe this is going to happen for him, but that's definitely hurt them in the lineup. And there's been other things that they keep just sort of teetering, you know. They kind of are almost at .500. They fall back. I thought they were on this great upward trajectory until they faced the Dodgers, and now they're kind of scrambling again.
And again, and we talked about this on Monday, so I hate to keep bringing up the same topics around this team, but starting pitching is a huge issue. And we mentioned it on Monday. The reason why we were talking about Jeremy Hellickson is because on Monday it was off after Josh Colemanter had given up three or four home runs to the Mets, and how the tone has changed with Patrick Corbin set to come back less than a month, currently on his rehab assignment. It used to be, is it going to be De La Rosa? Is it going to be Archie Bradley that Corbin takes over for in the rotation? That was the talk before the start of the season. Now it's the guys that were supposed to be your locks, Colemanter and Jeremy Hellickson. Hellickson last night doesn't pitch through four innings, six hits, five runs, two walks, 47 strikes on 76 pitches. Like this that can't be the case. You can't have your bullpen getting you through games, and the Diamondbacks were almost able to steal one with the bullpen doing most of the work, but you need starters to be able to give you innings. This bullpen is going to be completely gassed before the All-Star break.
Yeah, and that's not a good sign for the rest of the season, and it impacts so much. It impacts, like you mentioned, when starting pitching isn't delivering, you've got the bullpen that's struggling. I think the offense feels more pressure to deliver. They force things, and you know, and it's not just the two guys they mentioned. I think there's starting to be some questions about the other pitchers. I think De La Rosa is going to be fine. You know, we saw a very strong start. Then we saw some inconsistency. I sense from the organization they're still excited about him. You got guys who aren't healthy going to be coming back. So, you know, it's not a time to totally throw your arms up in the air about the starting pitching, but it's definitely a concern.
The Diamondbacks, as mentioned, they fought back. They were down 5-1 at one point in this game. They scored 3 in the 5th, 1 in the 7th, and then 1 in the top of the 9th to tie it before the walk-off single by Howie Kendrick. It ended up resulting in a sweep, but Chip Hale last night after the game talked about how you can't fault his team efforts based on last night's performance.
It's just tough. It's tough. The guys battle. I'm very proud of them. I told them that. They've got big hearts. They could have easily cashed it in there, down 5-1. You know, not having a whole lot of success in this ballpark, but they battled. We hit a lot of balls hard. The Dodgers made a lot of nice plays and get outs on us.
It's really hard. That's Chip Hale after the game. You look at this Diamondbacks lineup, and this is also next to the starting pitching. It's an issue that has been talked about quite a bit, and it's nothing new. But when you look at the numbers on screen, it really stands out. Ender and Ciarte hitting first, 292. Pollock second, 326. Goldie third, 349. Tomas fourth, 331. Then after that, Hill 229, Owings 241, which is actually better than he's been hitting. He's right. Really been struggling of late. Wellington Castillo 145, Nick Ahmed 217, and then you have a pitcher. So you have four guys closing out the bottom of your lineup, all hitting under 241 or below. Like that, you can't expect to sustain runs and score at the level that you want when the bottom of your order is just not performing.
No, absolutely not. And I know that they're trying different pieces, trying different lineups, moving things around. But it begs the question, sort of, what has gone wrong with that group? Is it, you know, obviously guys get hot and cold. There's that. Is there something internally? Do they need, you know, with their coaching staff, making more adjustments? It's such a tricky game, and I'm curious where they're going to go with this. If they're going to, you know, I know that at one point the Diamondbacks were looking for somebody to be that number four guy, and they didn't have it. So I don't know. I don't know if you fans can really feel comfortable like that bottom half of the lineup is going to be resolved or not.
But the fans are into it.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing. And what we've already seen with this season, as the Diamondbacks currently stand, 27-32. It's been the most exciting 27-32 I think you could see from a team in quite some time. We saw just a couple weeks ago, they started off a road trip with being swept by the St. Louis Cardinals. They end up battling back, playing against the Marlins and one other team on the East Coast. I'm blanking on who it was off the top of my head, but it ended up being a road trip with them, maybe a game, just a game under 500.
Sure.
This is a brutal road trip.
Right.
Dodgers, Giants, and then Angels for two before they come back and play the Angels at home at the end of next week. Starting off with a sweep isn't ideal, but they've had a little bit of success with the Giants so far this season, but they happen to be the best team in baseball over the last month or so. So they're going to have to kick it in gear and do it in a hurry, because if they go winless, which is possible with the teams that they're playing on this road trip, that's when you could be saying, well, it was fun while it lasted, but now the dog days of summer are here.
Yeah, no, and you don't want to go there because you don't want to start losing fans and losing attendance. I agree. They've been a team, for the most part, even when they've come down, they've come back. They just haven't sealed the deal. A lot of that has been because of pitching. I think what all fans want with this organization is to feel like there's some direction and some division and some vision. I don't think that has been the case the last few years. Obviously, for many years, they've had to rebuild. They lost a lot of money initially, so they have a very low payroll, I think, compared to most teams. So I think fans understand that they're not going to win the World Series this year or next year, but if fans feel like they're heading in the right direction, I think they're going to be okay. I think people like the hire of Chip Hale. I think that's been well received. Obviously, having Goldschmidt in that lineup brings people to the stands. So I think people are more encouraged, but this team still has to do more to kind of lock them in.
That's Paula Bovin. I'm Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad Sesmat today on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. Before we switch gears next segment to the NBA Finals, your overall thoughts on the Diamondbacks draft? You're just kind of from a grand scheme of things. Some of the things they did, they added a lot of college players. It seems right. Like they've done more high school over the last several years. First draft with the new regime, more college-driven, at least in the early rounds. Just kind of your overall thoughts and the direction from what they did this past week.
You know, and I'll be quite honest, it's so hard for me because we don't see these guys often for 4 or 5 years. I think I saw a stat that from the 2013 draft, there's only 5 guys from the first round that are even in the majors at this point. So it's so far removed, and, you know, how the minor league system develops them goes a long way. But based on what I'm hearing from national analysts, I think they've been very well received in what they've done. I have no problem with them going with college guys if they feel like, you know, they're maybe going to be more prepared to make the transition sooner. I think this is a team that wants to add good players sooner rather than later. That's their mission. So, you know, I think the draft has been well received nationally. It was obviously a good year for shortstop, so I understand some of the decisions they made, but a lot of these guys we're not going to see for probably 4 years.
And it was what I liked was the Diamondbacks didn't draft at number one overall based on a need.
Right.
Shortstop Nick Ahmed, they're very high on him. They have two very young guys in Domingo Leyva, who was in that Didi Gregorius trade, and also Sergio Alcantara, both young guys in the organization who are years away. They kind of just added to the depth at a position that overall in the majors just isn't very deep.
No.
Which is something that I applaud them for doing.
And I think at this point, especially where this organization is, you want to go to the closest sure thing there is, no matter what the position. And clearly no one is a sure thing, but when you've got a guy that you feel as confident about as they do about him, even if it's a position you have filled, I think you go in that direction. I thought that was a really smart move.
That's Paula. I'm Jared. We're filling in for Brad today on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. Coming up next, the Warriors. Are they pushed to the brink? Does it all come down to tonight? We'll get into that next. Back on the Brad Sesmat Show, Jared Cohen and Paula Bovin filling in for today for the big guy. And we're going to switch gears now to the NBA Finals. Game 4 coming up tonight between the Cavs and the Warriors. Cavs have a 2-1 lead as Game 4 is in Cleveland. And this series could get either very interesting or it could look like it may be slowing and coming to an end if the Cavs are able to win this thing, because the Warriors are, it kind of seems like they're in quicksand right now. They just can't seem to figure it out. But two things I want to run past you before we dive into this game. This is kind of just random thoughts copious thoughts that I have on leading into tonight's game 4. The first, the Warriors were down 2-1 to the Memphis Grizzlies. They had gotten blown out in game 2 at home. And then they didn't look good in Memphis in game 3. They come back and then they blow out Memphis, take control of the series. The rest is history. They're in the NBA Finals. Similar situation here. They win game 1 and then lose 2 consecutive games, one of them being at home. This is their opportunity to make adjustments.
Right.
So we'll see what Steve Kerr and company can do. The other thing is the Blackhawks won game 1, the Warriors game 1. The Lightning won game 2 and 3. The Cavs won game 2 and 3 in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
I see where we're going here, yeah.
Last night, the Blackhawks won.
Right.
Will the Warriors keep the trend in winning when the Blackhawks win? That's the little trend here that I'm starting to see develop.
There's enough people out there that buy that actually means something.
Of course.
I don't think you really do you, Jared?
Not really, no. not really. But if you do are into that sort of thing, the Warriors are going to win tonight.
Well, the bottom line is, I mean, the Cavs have done a really good job of sort of dictating the pace, and that's been a lot about their defense on Steph Curry. It's been about, you know, the guy we've been talking about all day, Dellavedova, and his defense, other people switching, moving on. So it's a matter of if they can kind of solve that. I always thought a team with great shooters like the Warriors have would succeed eventually in these finals. But as we've learned, shooting is not the overall end-all in the NBA Finals. A lot of people say it's not the way you're going to win it when you get to the postseason. It'll get you there, but not when you're in the finals.
Yeah, and offense has clearly been the problem with this team. National pundits or whatever might tell you otherwise that the defense has been the problem when you see Delly putting up 20 points and LeBron with these incredible statistics. But really, they're not shooting like they were all season. I mean, the numbers that Steph Curry's putting up, that's exactly all you need to know, because he shot at an incredible rate this year. Same thing with Klay Thompson. Same thing with Draymond Green. Same thing with Harrison Barnes. Iguodala is actually shooting a shade better than he was in this series compared to the regular season. It's been about their offense. And once that starts to click, and it started to click a little bit for Steph Curry in that fourth quarter. What do you go, 5 for 8 from three?
In that
comeback they made in the fourth. If it's starting to click with him, it'll probably start clicking with the rest of the team. But the one thing that I thought was really telling of this Warriors team is Steph Curry just said after the game, or maybe it was yesterday during their media availability, was they just have to get back to having fun again.
Right.
They're not having fun right now. And if you watch this team during the regular season and even in the playoffs to this point, it has been about this team is loose, they're fun, they're energetic, they play kind of like a pickup style of basketball with the shooting and the fast court and everything like that. They do need to get back to that. And if they do, I think that spells trouble for Cleveland, because it's hard to put that to rest.
It's funny you said that, because I have a friend who's been covering the series, and he said it was really interesting. In their locker room after this loss, they were much more upbeat. There was a much more of a gloom and doom after that first loss in the Warriors locker room. And he thinks it's because he believes some of the shots were starting to go down, and they felt like they were going to have a little momentum going into this game. He's convinced that they're going to win this game tonight. He just thought there was a sort of a swing in their attitude and momentum late in the game in the locker room afterwards. So we'll see. And there's also that school of thought that, is Cleveland going to be spent? I mean, is LeBron and company exercised and exhausted as much energy as they possibly can these first three games?
Yeah.
I don't know if there's anything to that, but when you have two really good players not available to you, everybody else is working overtime.
Yeah, and Dellavedova spent the night in the hospital because of dehydration. You know, I mean, there is something that's going to come into play with that. And I'm wondering why Sean Marion hasn't seen any action yet, because he's got experience in the finals and he's a veteran and he could play defense and get some rebounds, maybe score some points that you don't budget for. So I'm wondering if guys like that will start to perk up a little bit as Coach Blatt realizes that he's just running his players into the ground with how close these games in and how many minutes they've played.
Yeah, well, they have to go deeper on the bench now, which they haven't been. It's a fair question, you know. I don't know. I mean, and are we going to see the same Dellavedova after he got out of the hospital? Everybody says he's fine, but at some point, if you're spending the night in the hospital, you know, with those severe cramps and getting fluids and everything else, I don't know if your body recovers that quickly.
No.
It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, and one thing that stood out in Game 3, David Lee had a nice game. Mm-hmm. David Lee hasn't done anything in the playoffs. He really hasn't done much the whole season. It's a guy that spent most of his time on the bench or injured or vice versa. But he had a really nice game. And one of the biggest issues the Warriors have had defensively, even though I maintain that it's been an offensive issue, not a defensive issue, much to the chagrin of a lot of the national analysts, Lee had a nice presence when guarding Timofey Mozgov, who the Warriors have had no answer for, even in Game 1, which they won. Timofey Mozgov has been a huge presence down low for Cleveland. David Lee could be the solid counteract for the Warriors if they can continue to get good minutes out of him.
No, I think that's key, and I also think it's key for the Warriors tonight. I think the game starts at, is it 6 tonight?
I think it's 6.
Yeah, that they cannot get off to some of these, they have to get off to a stronger start. You're in Cleveland, you know, you've got to set at least somewhat of a tone. You can't play this comeback game. I think that's going to be key for them tonight. It was funny, I heard a quote from LeBron telling everybody in Cleveland to drink a lot of tea yesterday and today, because their voices were probably lost, and he's going to need them to scream and be into it. So the crowd is going to be out of its mind tonight. The Warriors have to be prepared.
How do you see the rest of the series unfolding? Is this the swing game? Like, do you think if the Warriors take this one and tie it up, it's their series to win? Or do you think that it just creates a new series?
I think it's going 7 games. I honestly believe it. Even if Cleveland wins tonight, I think they go back to Golden State and the Warriors, you know, will go win
again. We'll get it together.
So I still think it's going 7 games.
That's Paula Bovin. I'm Jared Cohen filling in for Brad Sesmat today on Sports 360 AZ.com. Lots going on in the sports world. We've hit on it. The Coyotes, the NBA Finals, Matthew Dellavedova, and even the Diamondbacks. All sorts of intriguing storylines. And it's Always a pleasure doing it with you.
Thank you, Jared.
Absolutely. Again, that's Paula. I'm Jared on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. Into hour number two on the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm Jared Cohen. That's Paula Bovin. I'm from Sports 360 AZ. She's from AZ Central Sports. Streaming on both sites today, it's the Brad Sesmat Show. We're going to switch gears, talk a little college football now. Joined by the head coach of the Arizona Wildcats, Rich Rodriguez, and Coach Eric, our producer, and I walking around ASU Passing League, and we see a couple people just decked out in U of A gear. Do you know anything about this? Is this your doing?
Well, there was rumors of a couple U of A fathers showing up to watch their sons during the ASU camp. So, yeah, I had a chance to watch my son, Rhett, and you know, those times, I get to watch him about four or five games in a fall, and that's just so much fun for me because I can sit back and watch somebody else coach, and I just can be a dad.
And I was going to ask you about that, Rich. If that's challenging for you to be the dad when you have the son with talent and you want to jump in and coach him. Is that a hard line for you to cross or to walk sometimes?
You know, it's funny. It's a good question, but it really isn't that hard because, you know, the coach spends all his time with him and all that. And I've had a chance to meet with my son's high school coach and talk some football, and he's been very open about it. But, you know, those guys put all the time in with him, and I don't get to work with them as much as they do, so I'll let them coach a team. But it was hard for me to sit in the stands on the first game. I was, because you know, you hear all the parents and hear everybody talk, and yeah, I just want to watch the game. So I wind up going down the other end of the field and standing by myself or with one of my other coaches whose son also plays there and just watching the game.
Are you nervous when you're watching? Are you one of those parents? Because you're looking at the game from a different vantage point than you usually do. Are you kind of like cringing? Yeah. Are you getting emotional?
You know, it's completely different than our game just because it's, you know, you're nervous for your own son. You want him to do well, so you feel like a great sense of pride when he makes a good play. I don't ever worry about getting hurt. He's pretty smart and, you know, playing his quarterback position. He gets rid of the ball pretty quick a lot of times. But it's, you know, it's a whole lot of fun because you can just sit back here and truly just be a dad and not evaluate things from a coaching standpoint. Now, that being said, you know, when I get a chance, I'll watch the game film with him because he'll want me to and give him a few pointers. And he's such a great kid, and he's so smart that he usually knows when he screws up before I have to say anything to him.
It's good stuff. It's Coach Rod joining us on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. Jared Cohen and Paula Bovin filling in for Brad Sesmat. Let's shift gears to your other boys, your Wildcats. So last year had the opportunity at Pac-12 Media Day to sit with you and asked you who was going to be this year's Scooby Wright. And you mentioned Jake Matthews. And you ended up being right. Jake Matthews, former walk-on, has a fantastic season. So I ask you now, who is going to be this year's Scooby Wright / Jake Matthews?
Boy, that's a good question. I don't know. I mean, Scooby set the bar so high that it's kind of sometimes tough to compare to that. But if you were looking for a guy, and I like to usually look at the upperclassmen, guys been in a program that has been a really good player and has made a lot of plays, but not a lot of people are talking about. And, you know, you look at Terrain Bonron and Jared Tevis and Jordan Grant, three really good safeties that you know, had great senior years. I think Will Parks, who's made a lot of plays for us already, he's a senior, he's a leader, a safety. I look for Will Parks to have a great year and be the kind of guy, like, where did he emerge from? And he hadn't really had to emerge because he's been there, but I think Will Parks is going to have a big year.
You know, someone who we saw obviously have a big year was your talented redshirt freshman quarterback, Solomon. I think, 3,800 yards he threw, 28 touchdowns, just 9 interceptions. What was the... Obviously, he's young. He accomplished so much. But what were the biggest things you thought for this offseason that he needs to improve upon?
You know, he was, you're right, for a redshirt freshman, he had a pretty phenomenal year, one of the best years ever in the history of our school. And he got better, I think, in the offseason by getting bigger, stronger, and faster. Did a great job in the weight room with our strength coaches. I think he's more comfortable with the offense. And he's not a rah-rah guy from a leadership standpoint, but I think now – because of his experience and because of the things he did last year, he feels more comfortable, you know, taking charge when he has to, when the coaches aren't around. And that's the kind of leadership we want out of him. And I think he'll continue to get better as his career goes on.
Coach Rich Rodriguez joining us here on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. You mentioned briefly the talented safeties and leadership that you lost from last season, all those guys graduating, moving on. You mentioned Will Parks. Jamar Allah, a local kid, has a lot of athleticism. Is this his opportunity to kind of crack the starting lineup a little bit?
You know, that was the other guy, when I mentioned Will Parks, the other guy I was going to mention is Jamar Allah. He's a guy who's really, for us, has been, we considered him a starter because he's played so much in our nickel situations. But he's another guy, a veteran of our program, at a neat position that I think is really poised to have a big year. You know, he's smart, he's tough, you know, he's paid his dues, and, you know, the opportunity's out there for him. So Jamar and Will are going to be, I think, the leaders for us in the secondary, and I think Jamar has had a great offseason.
How are you feeling recruiting is going in-state? I know that when I've talked to high school coaches, you've developed, even up here in the Valley, some very good relationships with them. How do you feel that's going? And do you have a sort of a philosophy of what percent of players you want from the state, from out of state, or does it just vary based on talent?
Well, it's certainly first based on talent and fit, but I think for us, we've always said, you know, we've got to do well in the state of Arizona. And it's a little bit cyclical, you know. Some years there may be 14 or 15 guys that we feel we can win a Rose Bowl with in state, and some years it might be 8 or 9. But I think, you know, we want all the best players in state to just give us a shot. The high school coaches have been terrific. I think any in-state kid that we wanted that has visited campus falls in love with it because it's obviously the facilities and environment and everything we have here at U of A. So we're just, sometimes it's frustrating when we can't get them to visit. Just to go down, whether they're from the Valley or whether, you know, where they're at in the state, if it's a kid we want or if we want to show around, just drive on down to Tucson and give us a shot to show you not only what our school and our campus and our city's like, but what our program is like, and talk to our players and our coaches. And all the ones that have done that have given us a legitimate shot at recruiting them, and that's all we can ask.
Staying on the recruiting topic, Coach, I've had conversations with high school coaches and guys that cover recruiting full-time, and they say how much the day and age we live in now with social media and the easier access to film has changed the game, not just for the big names and the guys that play in major cities, but the guys that play in small towns that really would have never been noticed because they live in those small towns back in the day before there was the access to this sort of thing. It's hard for college coaches to get to small towns where they have to drive an hour and a half, 2 hours, maybe even more from the biggest, closest airport to get there. How much have you seen all of this kind of change the game and the access and opportunity for players that maybe in the same town may not have had this opportunity back in the day?
Oh, it's changed quite a bit. As I told, we had 400 high school kids at our camp last weekend. I said, there's no reason for any of you not, if you're good enough, not to get recruited by some college, because you can make your own highlight film with Huddle and social media and all they had. You can get the information out there, and that has helped tremendously, certainly as far as getting information out there and getting highlight films out there, because coaches want to watch tape. They want to watch you play. And also the 7-on-7 camps and the 1-day camps. You know, we had our own. There's a lot of you know, really talented kids there. We're going around doing satellite camps all over the West Coast, and we've total 8 or 9 satellite camps my staff will be at. So you can be seen. In the old days, they would go to camps and it would cost $300. It was an overnight deal and it was tough, especially if you didn't have the money to do that. Now you can go to these 1-day camps for $25, $30, $35 and get seen. And so I think it's really helped coaching in a lot of ways, but it's also forced us as coaches to be more diligent in our recruiting process. I think sometimes we go too fast and we don't wait and leave enough scholarships for that senior that develops late in his career. And so we're purposely trying to do that this year.
Rich, we've seen with the evolution of the Pac-12 in recent years, you know, there's been more money within the conference. There's greater TV exposure. Games are on networks with more viewers. How much does that impact recruiting? When you're in houses, are you hearing kids asking about being on TV, about uniform colors, those things? How much do those things matter now?
I think there's a little bit too much fluff for some kids. You know, they look for the fancy stuff. But I think more than anything, they just want to see a program or a school that's committed to football. And I've said that since day one. Now, there's always been a tremendous amount of talent on the West Coast. It's what you got to find. One, you got to find schools and programs that are truly committed to football. And then on the flip side, we have to find student athletes that are truly committed and love football. Not like it and love, but love it, because it's such a tough sport, you better love it. And so I think that's been going both ways. We're finding more and more kids that love football, and you're finding the student athletes are finding more schools that are truly committed to football, and you can see by their facilities and what they're doing TV wise and all that to show that commitment.
So you're saying, I'm sorry, Jared, you're saying Arizona is not just a basketball school anymore. Is that your point?
Well, you know, when I got here, everybody said, what do you think about going to a basketball school? I said, well, at least we're known for something. You know, the truth is we're known for a lot of things. We're great in basketball and Olympic sports, you know, softball, women's softball, baseball. And we've been pretty good in football. We just have never had the facilities and commitment the way we do now. And so I think it's pretty neat when you walk around campus here and there's a bunch of elite athletes in every sport, and I think, you know, elite athletes gravitate toward other elite athletes, and so we have that going for us.
Speaking of elite athletes, Coach, there's not a lot of Pac-12 teams coming into this coming season that have returning their quarterback, their top receiver, and their top running back from the year prior. Have you had as many situations like this where you have such key pieces from a year prior coming back to be the main ones to go around the other important pieces to fill out the offense?
I have in a couple other places I've coached yet, and it's a comfortable feeling, but it's only going to be good if those guys coming back are better than what they were the year before. And I think that's been our challenge, and I feel pretty good that the guys are going to do that. But our league is so good, and as I told our coaches and our team, we could be better and then not showing our record. So we've got to be a whole lot better, because I know our opponents are going to keep getting better. And our league has gotten so good now. It's better. The Pac-12 is better than it's ever been, and it's not going to go backwards, so we got to do our job.
Coach, thank you so much for your time. Great stuff, and look forward to catching up again in the fall.
Okay, thanks, guys.
That's Rich Rodriguez, head coach of the Arizona Wildcats. All sorts of good stuff, especially on his son, Rhett Rodriguez.
Really interesting.
Remember the name. It's not just Rich Rod in town. There's Rhett Rod, too, in Tucson.
It's a movie star first name, too. Rhett. You got to like
Rhett Rodriguez from Fast and the Furious. That's what it sounds like. That would work out well.
I was thinking more Rhett Butler, but okay.
Oh, you know. Okay. There you go.
Leading man, you know.
Yeah, there you go. That's Paul LeBovin. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad Sesmat today. Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center available 24/7, 365 at sports360az.com.